Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Some guys have resumes that just stop you in your tracks. Author, illustrator, and filmmaker William Joyce is one of those. His illustrations have graced the cover of The New Yorker. His paintings are in art museums. The concepts for some of his characters in Toy Story and A Bug's Life, William Joyce came up with those too. He's won an Oscar. He's picked up three Emmys for Roly Poly Oily, an animated series based on his children's books. A second series, George Shrinks, airs daily on PBS. On top of all that, he's written and illustrated more than 50 children's books. William Joyce hasn't been to the moon yet, so there, and he joins us in just a moment. Later on this hour, tips for healthy summer gardens. But first up, a man Newsweek has listed as one of the top 100 people to watch in the new millennium, William Joyce. He joins us from his office at Moonbot Studios down in Shreveport. And Bill, so nice to have you. Good morning.
Well, thank you, Steve. It's great to be there.
So when are you heading to the moon, Bill?
I've gone there a number of times already, but yeah. You know, we need to keep it sort of, you know, I did a biography of the man on the moon. And so
I was
going to
ask you about it.
Together.
Yeah. Well, as a kid, you spent so much time thinking about the man in the moon. What did you think about?
Well, actually, it was as an adult that I thought about the man on the moon a lot.
Good for you.
You know, he just seemed like he would be a grand old gentleman that would be looking out for us. And then I concocted the idea that he put together what I call the guardians of childhood, and Sandman and the Tooth Fairy and Mother Goose and Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny, and they were all great, magnificent heroes. And so that became the movie Rise of the Guardians.
Rise of the Guardians.
Years ago.
You know, didn't the idea for the man in the moon, didn't that come from your daughter who was like 6 years old at the time?
Well, she said, "Hey, Dad, does the Easter Bunny know the Tooth Fairy?" And I was like, "That's a very interesting question. I'll see what I can find out." And so that's when I started thinking up this stuff. And you know, they at my house, all the adventures I came up with were those guys were taken as faith. So, you know, totally on face value. I asked if my dad knows the man in the moon. My dad knows Santa Claus. When they were little bitty. I did the windows at Saks Fifth Avenue, and then they had based them off of one of my books, and so they had Santa Claus there dressed as I had designed him. And so they were like, "Oh my God, Dad, you know Santa Claus, like, personally?" I'm like, "Yeah, evidently." You know?
As a matter of fact, I do. Yeah, not a bad thing to say. We're visiting with author, illustrator, and filmmaker William Joyce. You know, this notion that you're talking about here, the Rise of the Guardians, where you pull together Santa and the Tooth Fairy and the Easter Bunny and the Sandman sort of all together. You know, when I was a kid, I remember, you know, the comic books that had Batman and Superman teaming up together. Mm-hmm. Where did the idea, I mean, beyond what you just said, was that an influence on your getting Santa and the Easter Bunny teamed up together?
You know, I guess on some level it did, because I read all these comic books too, the Justice League.
Yeah,
America,
right.
And so when my daughter asked that question, I was just like, well, you know, it just kind of popped in my head. I mean, why would they not?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're all in charge of holidays or something like that. And so they're bound to, like, have conventions or something, you know.
Compare notes once in a while, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So it seemed, but then I'm like, well, they need a bad guy, you know, and it seemed quite logical that would be the Boogeyman, which, you know, I named Pitch. And the children call him the Boogeyman, much to his chagrin. He doesn't like that. He thinks it's demeaning. So, yeah.
Did you see Santa as the Superman of the group, Bill?
Kind of. I mean, the connection going from childhood to adulthood, right?
Yeah.
I went, Superman, I mean, Superman. The Santa Claus has got to be cool. He's not like this benign, elderly fella, you know. To do what he does all in one night, he's got to be on top of his game. And so I always sort of saw him as sort of Sean Connery.
Well, I was going to say, pictured him as Sean Connery. I couldn't believe when I read that. Yeah.
So, and that seemed to please people. And so I kept going with that.
And you tattooed the words naughty and the other word nice on either arm, right?
There you go, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not a guy to be trifled with. He makes a judgment. He decides if you've been naughty or nice. And, you know, there is a price to pay for being naughty.
And you saw James Dean as Jack Frost.
Yeah, which was, you know, first Jack Frost was a guy, an adult, but it wasn't quite gelling. And then one of the guys at DreamWorks said, well, what if he's young? And that really clicked in my head. I was like, gosh, I mean, being stuck at 14 forever would be horrible. And that changed everything, and it made it really, I think, accessible in some strange way that it hadn't been before. And of all the characters from that series, it feels like the audience has embraced the Jack Frost character the most. And at conventions now for comic characters, there's dozens of people dressed as Jack. And they even have him dating the girl from Frozen and all these Tumblr sites. It's really interesting to see how these things take on a life they didn't used to with new technology.
Well, Bill, you know that people wonder about how your mind works. And I'm just wondering, how do you come up with these ideas? And I mean, do you have time built into your day where you go off and think great thoughts, or how does it work for you?
Yes, from 11 to 12, great thoughts. It's on the schedule. No, I mean, I'm always in these lands, and, you know, I never really stop thinking about this stuff. It waves in and out. I mean, you know, I have to pay attention to, like, the basic things, like, I'm at a stoplight now, I must stop. But, well, you know, that's, like, just the functioning level, but my imagination tends to be roving about, and then I sit and write this stuff down, and it just has to feel true. And sometimes when I've ruminated about it enough, it just pours out, and it feels like I'm writing, a highly stylized truth, a thing, a world I wish could be.
Yeah, I mean, when you came up with the Guardians, I mean, did you know right away that it made sense, that it all clicked? Did that work for you pretty quickly?
It did, and that was like, that's the thing I'm talking about. It felt instinctual. It felt somehow right, and then I'm like, wow, that just came out, like, kind of very, very quickly and very fully formed. So I'm like, this can't be right. So I would ask, you know, I would tell my agent, or I'd tell friends, or I'd tell my kids. I'm like, this is what, you know, I would report it as though I just read the newspaper. And they go, that just sounds right. And I'm like, okay, I guess it's right.
And nobody kicked back at you too hard?
I'm trying to remember. I don't remember anybody saying, like, anything other than that sounds cool. So it just kept going with it, you know. And nobody said the Easter Bunny should be more like a bunny and less like a warrior, you know, puka.
Mm-hmm.
It was like I got to sit down and go, all the things that I've loved as growing up, all the stories that I've really, really loved, that can somehow filter into this canvas that I'm making, or this tapestry that I'm weaving. And even for the Easter Bunny, it was like I thought a lot about the play Harvey, and, you know, that had the giant invisible rabbit that was a puka, a Celtic creature of mischief.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just made it so that you could see him. And so right in the book, the you know, E. Astor Bunnymund is his real name, is the last of the pukas. And everybody went, yeah.
Of course, that's right. Yeah, yeah. Well, I got to ask you about Toy Story, you know, such an iconic movie. I mean, which of the characters did you conceive, and just how much fun was that movie to be involved with? Because I'm thinking, if that movie wasn't fun, I don't know what movie would be.
It was fun. It was a bunch of people who had never, you know, done that before, because nobody made an animated, you know, feature before. And I worked on Woody, I worked on Buzz, I worked on the aliens and the dinosaur, and you know, a whole bunch of them. Mostly, I think the thing I contributed the most to was the aliens. And then I worked on different sequences, just story ideas they had. It was really, as you say, it was fun. It was hard work. And it always is, but it's like there is when it's gelling like that, when you're with a group of people that are really on fire, mm-hmm. and have an idea in a world that they've forged and are in love with, it's so intense and so much fun that it's all, you're just like, God, I can't believe they're paying us for this. I mean, I feel like I'm getting,
that's neat.
You know, some tonic that's rare, and I should be paying them. So,
hey, well, when you saw the finished product, I mean, was it everything you had sort of hoped it would be?
Oh my God, yeah.
It was an amazing movie.
Well, my wife and I sat there at the premiere, and it was the premiere before the premiere. It was the cast and crew showing, and I just went, wow, I was part of something. This is going to change everything, and I had a little part in history, and it just felt golden.
Yeah. And has it changed everything, Bill?
It did, actually. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wasn't that interested in doing animation before because I just hadn't liked, I love the golden age or the first golden age of animation, which kind of, I don't know, I'd say maybe ended with 101 Dalmatians. Mm. But everything since then had been sort of diminishing to me. And, you know, they had things like, The Black Cauldron, which was terrible. And, you know, Disney didn't, everybody seemed lost in animation. I was waiting for something cool to happen in animation. And John Lasseter called me and saw, he had seen my children's books. And he was like, would you like to work on our first film? And I'm like, well, can I see your stuff?
Yeah, yeah.
Because at that point, nobody knew who they were. So he sent me their short films. And I was like, this is awesome. This would be a wonderful thing to be involved with. And
I was going to say, with a film like Toy Story, Bill, it seems to me that the concept was so strong that it would have just, right out of the gate, you knew you had something that would borderline on a winner because the concept was so strong.
Well, look, that's good for you to hear you say. At the time, that was not at all like the conventional wisdom. I mean, Disney thought that their big release that year would be Pocahontas, and so, you know, they were pushing that. There was like, Toy Story was the other movie that was going to come out, and they really didn't expect a great deal from it. It was a low budget, at least in terms of animated films. And so the expectations were, well, it's an experiment, and we'll see. But after the first test audience preview, it was just like, oh my God, we've got something here. And so, we didn't know. I mean, we hoped. I mean, you never know when you're making these things. Mm-hmm. I mean, it feels good or it feels bad, but you're never sure.
Right.
Until an audience tells you. Because you've seen it so many times by the time it's getting done, it's just like you're almost numb. You're just going on instinct. But when an audience responds, then you're like, oh, okay, we can breathe again. And the studio went, we might have a hit here. And so at the time, though, It was a crapshoot.
If you have a question, if our members of our audience have a question for Bill Joyce about some of the different books he's made, the films he's made, or how his mind works, 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Again, 816-235-2888. You know, the experience, Bill, that you had working on Toy Story wound up influencing how you went about creating the Roly-Poly-Oly animated series, and you once said, I decided to merge my robot paintings with a computer, to paint with a computer. You then embarked on an amazing collaboration that involved what exactly?
Well, it's a collaboration that hasn't ended. It's really just taking off, I think. I mean, I'm still like almost computer phobic, but I know what they can do, and I know how to tell people what I'd like to see them do. And so, you know, after working on Toy Story and then Bug's Life, and then I was introduced to Chris Wedge at Blue Sky and worked on robots with him and our film that came out last year, Epic. And then I did Roly-Poly-Oly. My life had been so like quiet. Mm-hmm. And I mean, doing books is a very singular endeavor.
Yeah.
And to my surprise and delight, you know, working and collaborating with people was really fun, especially in animation. And so my career began to take two paths, you know, one with making films and television shows and the other doing books. But for a while I was tired of painting. I just had gotten kind of burned out, and except for an occasional New Yorker cover, all I did was write and didn't illustrate for a long time. And so, I guess 4 years ago, I decided to try to start my own animation studio with two friends from the industry.
Yeah.
And we wanted to do it here in Louisiana, so we formed Moonbot Studios. And so our first short film that we did, The Fantastic Flying Books of Morris Lessmore, won the Academy Award for Short Film.
You
and,
bet.
And so that was really an affirmation of, like, not only that I'm not a dope and that I may know what I'm doing, but that we could do it, we could make films and do a whole different kind of model of how to do films and do it in our hometown in Shreveport, Louisiana, in this, you know, the least likely place in the world for there to be a motion picture studio.
Yeah.
And so we've begun to do, you know, our own stories, both in films and in books, and I've learned to paint on the computer now. So a lot of times I'll start, as I used to, you know, with paint and canvas, but then scan it and work on it further in the computer and finish it out there in the computer. So the new book that we have coming out today,
The Numberlies,
called The Numberlies,
yeah,
is all sort of a collaborative thing of Moonbot Studios. I came up with an idea to do, I wanted to do an epic alphabet book.
But, you know,
how do you
of course.
Make an alphabet book epic? I mean, it's just, you know, 26 letters. And then I went to see the film Metropolis, the amazing, that famous science fiction film by
right.
Fritz Lang from 1927. It had been restored and beautifully restored. And I went, I was like, God, that's just, there's a magnificence to this that I want to be able to show kids that, you know, children's books, it's among the first art that kids often see. So why not try for something really, really magnificent and grand and epic? And so the two ideas began to merge, you know, this just epic and then the alphabet, and that the people in this world, much like in the world of Metropolis, have an amazing, you know, present that they live in, and but they don't have numbers yet,
mm-hmm.
I thought. I mean, they don't have letters yet. All they have is numbers. And so they, it, that's fine. Everything's very orderly. Everything's, you know, cool. The skyscrapers are high. The flying cars work. But it's a little dull. And that there are five of these people, these numberlies, that want more.
Hmm.
And so they slip into the number factory that night, and they start taking the numbers and fashioning them into different shapes. And so they make the alphabet, and that changes everything. Suddenly, the alphabet, you know, they have letters, and they have words, and words like yellow, and then all of a sudden there's color, because until then their world had been black and white.
Mm-hmm.
And they no longer have to eat, you know, 2677755, which was their gray food. And now they have pizza and jelly beans, and so it changes everything. And so it's sort of this weird combo of the idea of black and white and color, like in Wizard of Oz, and then Metropolis,
yeah.
and the alphabet. And insanely, you know, it was like telling the publisher, we're going to do Metropolis, but for kids. And they're like, well, what's Metropolis?
Yeah, right, right, right.
But it seemed to work.
Well, I was struck by the book and the film. I've seen both. I mean, you've admitted, Bill, to having so much math anxiety as a kid growing up. Did that play a role in all this?
Probably,
somehow.
Wow, you've really been reading your stuff.
Yes, too much so. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Look, I the only reason I got out of college is they had, like, phony math classes for people who
yes.
couldn't do math. Otherwise, I'd still be there. And I still have nightmares about, you know, I'm still in college, still taking this math course that I cannot pass. But, yeah, I suppose it did. But, you know, now that I've been working in computers for such a long time and understand, you know, the numerical beauty of code writing and all that kind of stuff, it doesn't freak me out like it used to. But I also thought, you know, you need both. You need numbers and you need letters. You need language. You need you know, mathematics. And so we're going to do a sequel called The Letterlies, and it's a planet where they only have letters, but they have no numbers. So everything's chaos.
Well, of course you are going to do a sequel to that. Well, that sounds great. Author and illustrator William Joyce is our guest. I mean, one thing about your work that struck me and puzzles me a little bit is, even with The Numberlies, the film is just 11 minutes long, 11 minutes and a little change. When the credits rolled at the end, I was struck by just how many people are involved even in the making of an 11-minute film. I mean, one question is, who sees short films? And two, why not go ahead and make it a full-length motion picture?
Well, okay. Excellent question.
Thank you.
Full-length motion pictures cost lots of money.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had this idea, and we knew we wanted it to be several things. It was first an app, you know, which was basically laid the groundwork for the short film. But it was an interactive app for the iPad, and it did very well and was as much lauded and appreciated. And so that proved to us that A, it was a good idea, and B, that, you know, we weren't insane, and that you could make an epic alphabet story based on Metropolis for kids. As insane as it sounds, people liked it.
And so there, yeah.
I began to, you know, I'd written the book years ago, but, you know, now it was like, well, let's do the pictures. And then also we sort of adapted our early work on the app to become the short film. And really just as a way to keep the property alive and out there, and also as a template for what we wanted to continue to do with these characters, which was to work on a book and do more apps about them, with them, that would work with the book. And so we've come up with this, you know, amazing technology where we call it the Imaginatron, where you can point your iPad or
yes.
any of your, all those devices that Kindle and, you know, everything. You can point it at the book, and then the book will come alive on your screen, and the characters from the book will begin to have different adventures that you can manipulate on your screen. So it's a furthering of the book experience and a different experience. And some of it, I swear, I mean, Steve, it looks like alchemy. Like, I can't believe you can sit there and have these characters on your screen that you've just pointed at your book, but now they're on your screen, and you can. And it looks like they're running around in the room with you, and it just doesn't seem possible. It feels like the future we've been waiting for has finally come. You know, I'm waiting for my flying car to pull up tomorrow, because if you can do this, that's going to happen too.
Well, you become such an industry unto yourself. I'm just wondering, Bill, do you have trouble, or how do you prioritize what needs to get done on any given day? Because you've got so many balls up in the air, don't you?
Well, I have lots of, you know, amazing collaborators. So, you know, my partner, Brandon Oldenburg,
who
co-directs with me, and we've hired some other amazingly talented young men and women who are starting to direct things with us and take over projects. So basically we're taking smart people and giving them the room to be as smart as they can and to join in our, you know, sandbox. And so I will focus on a specific, and it depends on, you know, sort of, all right, we need this done now, and I'll focus on that. But more and more, I just sort of walk around and bless things and guide them, and then focus on a story that I want us to tell. And I don't know. I feel like I'm getting away with murder. I mean, I was telling Brandon, my partner, the other day. I'm like, you know, we basically are getting to do exactly what we want to do, and we haven't gone broke yet, and people seem to like what we've done. And, you know, we're doing books, and we're doing apps, and we're doing short films, and we're going to do a feature, and we're doing games, and we're playing in all the funnest places on the playground, the technological playground right now. We're helping define what this new language or new world of entertainment is going to be, and though we're in this little place. So it has this very nice sort of Andy Hardy, let's put on a show feeling to it.
Bill, it sounds like just an absolutely wonderful life. Good for you.
For the most part, yeah. Except every now and then, you know, you've gone over budget. Uh-oh.
Yeah.
I wasn't good with math, I told you. But other than that, yeah, we're having a good time.
Well, Bill Joyce has been our guest. His new book is The Numberlees. It's a new short film as well, an app that goes with it. Lots of things going on there. And, Bill, what a pleasure to have you. We wish you all the best of luck in the future. And, by George, come back and visit with us again sometime.
We sure will, Steve. Thank you so much.
Sure enjoyed it, Bill.